This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one, the only, unofficial UK Seahawkers podcast. This week we finally can talk about real, live, actual, meaningful NFL Seattle Seahawks games. This week, myself, Stuart Court, has been left in the lurch somewhat, as the other half of this podcast, Adam Nathan, just made the decision to go and get married this weekend. He's somewhere on his honeymoon. Massive, massive congrats to Adam. They always say that good things happen to good people, and that is certainly a good thing happening to a good person. So stepping in into his, well, not shadow so much as like a shaded area, is Duncan Terry, who writes for 99 Yards. How are we, Duncan?
Very good, very good. I've got a cup of tea, I've got a beer, I'm ready to go. I realise I've got huge shoes to fill. And I've got a voice made for silent movies, but if you guys can put up with me, then I'm grateful. Yeah, it's good to be along.
Yeah. It was. I met you a couple of years ago at one of the Scotland meets. It was very strange to hear the accent in Glasgow and say, "Oh, well, yeah, live around the corner." Like, what?
Yeah, I always surprise people talking
about that. But yeah, obviously the Seahawks kick off the 2018 regular season with a trip to Mile High Stadium against the Denver Broncos. We'll get onto that a little bit later. Obviously, the main thing that happened over the weekend was the roster was trimmed down from 90 to 53, and then obviously the practice squad was announced just after that as well. Any surprises for you in the 53? Obviously, there's a lot of attention paid to that final spot in the wide receiver group. Possibly who was going to play opposite Shaquille Griffin, but were there any surprises for you? Any surprise cuts?
Do you know what? It was a very unsurprising 53. It's probably the biggest surprises for me, Brandon Marshall. I hate to say this, he's probably done as far as the NFL goes, and that might, I don't know. Obviously, I hope he does really well, but having seen in the last few years, he's not looked as good as he has done. But yeah, who else were we going to choose? The defensive tackle spots look really interesting. Some really young, hungry players there who it's going to be a good mix. It'll be interesting to see who starts. But there's a lot of talent there, I think, that's going to surprise people.
Yeah, were you surprised about Amara Darbo? Obviously, he was cut and signed for about 4 hours by the Patriots and now has undergone, I think, shoulder surgery, which seems to be ruling out for most of the season. But obviously that's all after the fact. Were you surprised that he was, even with his draft capital, he wasn't able to hang on for a second season of doing nothing?
Well, you know, I wasn't surprised to see him go, apart from the fact that they do like to cling on to players a lot longer than some of them deserve, don't they? It's,
yeah.
Something that happens with these Seahawks, but I'm sad for him. I wish him every success, but he hasn't really proved very much for me, no.
No, but I think the main surprise for me, I had him on my projection, I whacked up at some point on Saturday, that Keenan Reynolds didn't make the team. I mean, he's possibly the best option quarterback ever seen in college football when he was in college football, and he seemed to show signs that he was grasping on in that slot role, which obviously with Doug Baldwin's issues with his knee could be something where we have a big void to fill. At some point this season, it just sounds quite eerily similar to the ticking time bomb with Sherman's Achilles last year. But so Keenan Reynolds could be this year's David Moore, couldn't he? Where he's called up at some point during the season where
yeah.
they just want to keep him away from other teams.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. He's on the practice squad, isn't he? He looked flashes. I don't think he did anything wrong particularly.
No.
No, he's just a victim of numbers, isn't it? I think they'd like to have him on the roster. He's got a lot of, you know, traits, different things he can offer. So I would expect to see him for sure.
Yeah, obviously one position which entering the weekend was up for debate was a backup quarterback spot behind Russell Wilson. Austin Davis and 7th round pick this year, Alex Magoo, Magoo did more for me than Austin Davis, because Austin Davis has been bad and has been bad for a long time. Magoo shows signs, he had a pretty live arm, but the team decides to trade for the Green Bay Packers backup, former UCLA quarterback Brett Hundley. On the deal itself, I mean, it's a late round draft pick next year. It's a bit strange that they give up a 2019 late round draft pick and could be argued stunted the growth of this year's late round draft pick. Your thoughts on the trade before we get onto Hundley?
Well, I can't disagree with anything you've said. I think obviously Magoo looks good. He's young, he's inexperienced. Is he ready to play if Wilkerson goes down? Probably not. So they did need someone who's done something in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, as you mentioned, talking about Hundley, he was big time in college. He's been sitting behind Rodgers. He didn't have a great time there, but I'm pretty pleased to see someone who's got even a little bit of experience. I saw him play for college. It was my only college game so far. Saw them lose to Stanford, but he did look great in college. It was a good experience, and just because I've seen him, I don't mind him on the roster at all.
No. So obviously it doesn't change the fact that if number three goes down, all hell is going to happen, and it's going to be not much fun watching this Seahawks team, is it? That doesn't change by the presence of Hundley or Magoo or Davis, does it? It's still the fact that the drop off from QB1 to QB2 and 3 is vast.
Yeah, I think unless you've got someone big time backing him up, if he goes down, we're pretty much done anyway, aren't we? It's
I mean,
going to be an interesting year. But
yeah,
he's key, isn't he? So
yeah, he is. I mean, it'd be a shame if there was a quarterback who almost went to two Super Bowls in back-to-back years was on the open market. Wouldn't that be a shame? It'd be weird if there was someone out there that could be signed and fill that void somewhat, wouldn't it?
We wouldn't be talking about Kaepernick, could you?
No. Possibly. No, maybe. Maybe get on to him a bit later. Obviously, after 53-man roster was all tidied up, the team announced a couple of days later their 10-man practice squad. The practice squad is quarterback Alex Magoo, who I believe is getting his full guaranteed money he gets as a 7th round pick. I think that's right. Wide receiver Caleb Scott, wide receiver Keenan Reynolds, quarterback Akeem King, running back and former Husky Lavon Coleman, linebacker Antoine Williams, defensive tackle Frank Heron, guard Jordan Ruse, tackle Elijah Nkansa. Sorry to the Nkansa family if I mispronounced that name. And tight end Marcus Lucas. Lavon Coleman was the one that caught my attention just as a Husky, because he at times outperformed Myles Gaskin in Washington last year. But any of those names should be interesting in keeping track of as a season. Obviously, it's going to be a fluid one. It'll be changes every week and every day as the team churns the roster and churns practice squad as for different opponents and things like that. But anyone from that initial 10 that catches your eye?
Probably King, defensive back, just because there's so much uncertainty there at the moment in the team. You know, there could be a lot of rotation. If he goes to prove something in practice, we may well see him elevated to the team, because I think there's some holes to fill, there's some backup spots that need filling. So that could be interesting. Coleman was interesting. Yeah, he's obviously got some talent that we've seen playing for Washington, but what are there, 4 running backs on the team at the moment, and a fullback? So, you know, there's no great hurry to bring anyone on, so that's a little interesting. But no one else really. It's a lot of young players who I assume are, you know, really keen to learn. So
yeah. So how do you feel about the 53 as we enter week one in Denver? It's still a bit thin in certain important spots where it wasn't thin 12 months ago.
Well, it's a work in progress, isn't it? It's been a little bit of roster reset. It's no secret there. Pete Carroll's trying to make the squad his own. Obviously, there's been a lot of publicity about maybe some of the voices in the dressing room were sort of too strong and in the wrong way, perhaps, you know, unconfirmed. But he's trying to make this his own. And what he did before was he brought on some young, hungry players, the round fourth, round fifth round picks, who made the team and became special. And he's trying to do that again. But I think what we've got to remember is, with a bit of realism, is that players like Sherman and Chancellor, they didn't play immediately. They came on throughout the season. They looked good, but they really weren't special and starter ready till the season after. So I'm approaching it with a little bit of realism and hope that these players are able to build on that throughout the season and maybe aim for improvements next year.
Yeah, it is a wait and see in a lot of positions. A lot of players, obviously, the positions where they're young, and they have also do have people like Shabazz Stephen and the other defensive tackle they got from Vikings, Tom Johnson, where you kind of, the age is not something you'd expect the Seahawks to have after, as you say, have approached things in recent years. And we'll get back on to week one and what awaits Seattle in the Rockies this Sunday night. But another thing that broke since last time we did the podcast, Tyler Lockett entering his contract year, somewhat surprisingly, more timing, but also the money, signed a 3-year, $31.8 million contract with the Seahawks, which includes $20 million in guarantees, and he'll earn a base salary of $1.9 million and a cap hit of $2.1 million. For me, money is possibly slightly steep, but as I said, the biggest weird anomaly about this was the timing, because Tyler Lockett in 2017, after what was a pretty horrific leg injury the year prior, was not $31 or $20 million worth of player, was he?
Probably not, no. But, I mean, that's the going rate these days. And when you're so thin at the position, what else are you going to do, I think? It might be a case of there's a lot of mouths to feed come the end of the season, Frank Clark, whether they do something with Earl Thomas or not. To get that done now and out of the way and, you know, in the books, you know, you don't have to think about it anymore. And maybe, you know, he's wide receiver two if we get someone new next year, possibly three. And he's good. He's solid. He's a great returner. I think I heard some crazy stat, like he's got the most yards, you know, all-purpose yards of any player in the league at the moment. So, you know, why not? You know, it's good to have that one done.
Yeah, it is slightly rich though, isn't it? Do you not think?
Or? Probably. I forget what it is. Something in the teens, isn't he, in terms of like a list of highest paid receivers. A bit high, possibly. But like I say, what else are we going to do? You know, it's apart from having a fifth of our money invested on players that aren't even on the team, it's difficult to see where else the money's going to go. He's looked good, so take a chance, you know.
Since all the roster was initially set, the team did put two claims in for two different players. They claim for guard Jordan Simmons, is that his name? I've lost where I had it written down, from Denver, and they also claim someone else who I can't remember. Is it Jordan Thomas? They claim the cornerback, which Pete Carroll said his lungs are so armed that he shakes your hand from 4 feet away. They also, to do that, they did also release another former third round pick in Reese Odhiambo. Odhiambo was the left tackle in week one last year after George Fant went down and then ended the season abruptly with some hand issues, a broken hand I think it was, maybe broken both hands as well, which sounded very painful. But another third round pick which completely flamed out with, well, quite a bit of a whimper.
Duncan. Yet again, another one who joins the list, like Glowinski and Poole and all those other big disappointments that we wish they hadn't drafted at the time and weren't surprised they didn't succeed. I wasn't surprised to see that they'd brought in a young corner. I was hoping for Deshaun Shedd when he was released by the Lions. I was so disappointed in the way he left and just to lose him at all. So, you know, that was a disappointment, but yeah, like I say, not surprised.
No, yeah, it's Deshaun Shedd, it sounds like he's career might be in jeopardy, because it doesn't sound like he's got over his nasty knee injury, does it?
Yeah,
what the Denver press has said. No, so that could be, would be a shame, because when he got injured, he was playing up to the level of the guy opposite him, Richard Sherman.
Yeah, he was quality.
Injured 18 months ago. Obviously, the big news breaking a few hours before we did the podcast, though, is that Earl Thomas, the all-world, all-pro, all-universe free safety, ended his contract dispute holdout and has returned to the team and practiced today. Doug Baldwin said earlier on that he was ecstatic to see Earl Thomas, and when he walked in the meeting room earlier today at VMAC, he went and gave the former Texas safety a big hug. It doesn't change anything. He hasn't yet been paid. Pete Carroll said they're going to wait and see on if he plays this on a lot of things with Thomas, including how much or if at all he plays on Sunday. It appears that this is, I'll play this year, then I'm off. But how do you see this playing out with Earl Thomas? Or do you still see a trade is likely?
Well, if I can give my article from last week a shameless plug, I spoke to Walter Jones for the website at 99 Yards, and we spoke a little about the Earl Thomas situation. He suggested that Earl Thomas would be back for week one, because that's when the big money starts rolling in. That's when you really start missing the wage. And, of course, he was right. Week one rolls around, and he's back. So... But yeah, it could be all my worst fears that he just comes, he plays out the season, and in 17 weeks he's off and signing for someone else. Will he just phone it in? Yet to be seen. I'd really like him to just pay the man, because he is one of the best players on defence that we've seen in a decade, not just on our team, on any team. And I think one school of thought, isn't it, is that they've seen a lot of injuries to Chancellor and Sherman, and they're worried about investing so much money. I don't know if that's true, but I mean, you've just paid Tyler Lockett, and he's just off the treatment table. So, yeah. I mean, you have a great player, whether he's injured or not. He's a great player and needs signing. I hope they do. If not, trade him. I say with gritted teeth, because I really want him to stay, but I don't want him to walk and we get some compensatory pick, which we waste on a Barcavius Mingo. You know, it's a tough situation for everyone.
Yeah.
It's a weird one. I just watched Doug Baldwin's interview. He was talking about how pleased he was to see him back, and you know that he's a true leader, and you know he's one of the boys, and you know, how could we possibly be angry with him? And I'm wondering, is Doug Baldwin thinking it's my turn soon? You know, I want playing soon. You know. But no, they're all pals. I'm sure we've all been texting and talking throughout, and I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a funny old situation.
Earl took to Instagram to announce his return to the team, saying, "I worked my whole life for this. I've never let my teammates, city, or fans down as long as I've lived, and don't plan on starting this weekend." With that being said, the disrespect has been well noted and will not be forgotten. Father Time may have an undefeated record, but best believe I plan on taking him into triple overtime when it comes to my career. The disrespect has been well noted and will not be forgotten has been the main takeaway from that. That could be about anything, and really, if he thinks he's been disrespected, then that's his prerogative, isn't it? You can't really criticise him. Other people are very quick and are doing so in their droves, but if he feels disrespected by the team, he has every right to be, because he obviously knows his value, knows his worth to the team, but also at the same time knows the business side of it, and he's just like after number one and trying to provide for the people that matter most to him and his family and everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he feels...
I mean, like I say, he's seen Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman get injured, and for one of them, their career's over. Cliff Avril, his career's over. He does, you know, what is it about other than looking after number one? You have to in this life. And
yeah,
you know, he's in the last year of a contract. He's an all-world player. He needs playing, you know, and I understand his point of view. Seahawks less so, but I do also to an extent. It's tricky. It really is.
That will be something to watch. Not as in regards to this week in Denver, to watch as it unfolds, also during the season where I would not be surprised. I don't think it'll happen, but I would not be surprised if we see a Thanksgiving time deal, contract extension given to Earl Thomas to appease him and keep him in Seattle for the rest of his career, which is something Pete Carroll said earlier on that he really wants to happen. And if you listen to what Pete Carroll said about him over the last 4 or 5 years, and he's basically the avatar of that Pete Carroll defense, so that seems to hold a lot of weight. But yeah, let's get on to talking proper games, proper meaningful stuff, as the Seahawks travel to Denver in week one of the 2018 NFL season this Sunday.
What's going on, guys? This is Michael Robinson, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
Yeah, the Seahawks open their 2018 campaign with back-to-back road games, the first of which is this Sunday, 9:15, I think the kickoff is, UK time, maybe 9:25, I'm not too sure. Around 9 o'clock, get yourself down, get your Domino's in, get your Pringles and Doritos or whatever else, get your beers, get your craft beer ready for about 9 o'clock, and get ready to watch the Seahawks in meaningful game action. The Denver Broncos are not the Denver Broncos that we last saw, as much as the Seahawks aren't the Seahawks that the Broncos last saw 4 years ago. Duncan, is that fair?
Yes, absolutely fair. There are a lot of turnover there. They've still got the key players, as we have. But, the quarterback positions all change. It's Case Keenum these days, isn't it? Has had, let's call it, ups and downs in his career. He's looked good, he's looked bad, and you wonder how he's going to be for the Broncos. They've got some great-looking wide receivers. It's probably going to usher in the new blood with Cam Sutton, Sean Hamilton, and a new running back. So, really, they're an unknown quantity in a lot of respects.
Yeah, but on the offensive side, Courtland Sutton, for anyone who's listened to this podcast for the last 2 years, or anyone's had a conversation with me for the last 2 years, he was my boy for, well, all of his time at SMU, pretty much, and a second-round pick for the Broncos. It's going to be hard watching him annihilate Dante Johnson this Sunday.
If it ever does.
Oh, my days. But he is a matchup nightmare for a Seahawks defense, which has a few questions to answer. We're moving into week one. But on the defensive side for the Broncos, Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, George Fant, Jermaine Fenner, whoever plays on the right hand side, and Dwayne Brown have their work cut out straight off the bat, don't they?
I think it would be a fadey, and I think he'll be a huge disappointment. Your listeners are really going to think I'm a downer, but I promise, I swear I'm just realistic. And Afedi is we know what he is, and Von Miller is going to feast. Their defensive backs and the pass rushers, it's going to be a really, really tough day. It always is in Denver. I mean, I saw a stat. I think we've got one win out of 8 Pete Carroll opening road games. So,
and the Broncos have lost, I think, 7 of the last 59 games at home in September. Well. So yeah, it's not an easy place to go to, because obviously air is hard to come by.
Quite.
in the way above sea level, hence Mile High. Yeah, moving on to the Seahawks. Obviously, offense, as we said earlier, begins and ends most likely with number 3, Russell Wilson. The little bit we saw of him in preseason, the O-line seems to be holding up. Obviously, defensive game plans in preseason are pretty vanilla, but the O-line seems to hold up well enough for him to get the throws out and get the ball out to a Seahawk player. It's going to have to continue, but as we say, it's going to be tough to do against that D-line. But the Seahawks win percentage, as we will say every week and have been saying for the last 4 or 5 years, depends a lot on Wilson, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as long as he's there, he's going to keep you in the game. Dwayne Brown's had a year now, well, most of a year and off season, so he's going to be well into the game. There's been some changes. The return of Sweezy is an interesting one. Pocic, he's second year, so, you know, and Britt is strong. So the O-line should see improvement, and if it doesn't, I'll be extremely disappointed. Apart from that right side, which will probably be Fants a few seasons into the season.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if by London if George Fant is the right tackle for the Seahawks. Outside of Wilson, obviously, running back Rashad Penny is playing. Hasn't had much work over the last month as he's recovered from a broken, finger?
A sore pinky.
I think an index finger. Yeah. Obviously, Chris Carson has looked quite impressive in preseason. Adam said last time we did a podcast that the modern NFL does have the 1-2 punch running back. This is possibly the spot where the most excitement can be centered around the Seahawks offense. Those two, how they're going to look in proper games, but also how they're going to use them as well, they, with Carson and Penny.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I love Chris Carson. I think he's fantastic. I was shocked they went first round for a running back when they got him. They've got McKissick. Davis looked good. And they used that pick there, but it really showed you where the focus is going to be. And you know, that's exactly what we're going to see on Sunday, is them just running the ball and sort of trying to wear the Broncos down. It's going to be interesting. I expect Penny's carries to be down because he's just returned.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new season. He's a rookie. But he's going to be a big part of the offense going forward. And I hope he succeeds. I really do.
See, on running backs, who do you think that third guy is going to be on Sunday? Davis or Procise, or do you see?
Probably Procise. I mean, he's that change of speed, change of play type of back. Davis will probably come in as people start to get worn down towards the end of the game.
Yeah. So obviously also on offense, tight end Jimmy Graham is no longer in Seattle. He's now catching passes from the best quarterback in the league, in Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Ed Dixon, who was the guy signed to replace him, is going to be the guy signed to probably cost us the compensatory pick Graham could have brought us. He's out for the first month or so of the season with an injury. He didn't seem all too happy about that designation either earlier this week on Twitter. So it's a case of Nick the Net's world, and now we're going to have to live in it. It may seem unfair for the limited opportunities had, but this is a make or break year for Vanette, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. He's going to get his chance now. Let's hope he grabs it. I haven't been impressed so far. It's going to be. I look at him as yet another pick that's going to end up somewhere else. But that position group just does seem to be a little bit of a mess. Disley, legs look good. He's possibly more of a blocking tight end. And I must admit, I'd never even heard of the third guy, Darrell Daniels from Indianapolis.
Well, Daniels, when he's at UW, was the actual tight end, while Will Disley was the Peterson project conversion from defensive line. Daniels was the tight end who was recruited to be a tight end and play tight end. Disley had a switch and possibly outperformed him. Obviously, Disley was drafted, and Daniels, I don't believe, was from the Colts.
No, obviously I couldn't tell you, unfortunately. but fingers crossed for the lad.
And obviously the Tyrone Sweets was the guy I wanted to watch all preseason, and there's absolutely nothing, and he's no longer on the team. So yeah, tight end position is quite razor thin on for the Seahawks. Ask people to send in their questions, as we always do. Mike Flint wanted to ask why we're on offense with the switch at O-line coach, and he thinks a change of scheme will the O-line be top half O-line in the league. We're not really, that's probably setting the bar a bit too high, but early signs suggest that it's going to work. But also, one thing it seems to be working for is the running backs they have at their disposal. A lot of like the pulling, the guys coming around and pulling, seems to favour the way that Carson and Penny run the ball, doesn't it? A very, very early signs, obviously.
Yeah, it's going to be a change. I'm certain it's going to look better. it's going to be. I mean, it all comes back to Jermaine Fady, doesn't it? And let's be honest, how quickly they replace him. But shameless plug again. Walter Jones was suggesting that moving from left tackle to right tackle is like driving on the right-hand side of your car for your entire life and then suddenly being asked to drive on the left. You can do it. You know how to drive, but you know, you've really got to think a lot harder about it. So it's going to take him some time to adjust. But I'm pretty positive about it. I think he's got it in him.
Yeah, I'd hope so. He looked all right during preseason, but it will be a thing. Top half O-line, that's probably not going to happen, but just better is all he asked for, isn't it?
That's all I want.
Yeah, switch it over to the defensive side. KJ Wright is out injured for this week. It sounds like he has a chance for the Bears game after he's had his knee scoped 10 or 11 days ago. And possibly one of the more underreported stories of the NFL season is that a fifth round draft pick, with all the other hurdles he has to jump over in his life, in Shaquem Griffin, is going to start his first NFL game at the first opportunity. On Shaquem Griffin, it is one hell of a story, an unbelievable story. As I said during the draft, it almost seemed that the rest of the league just let the Seahawks pick him up. It is quite a story, but also it's, again, it's big shoes to fill in KJ, who, yeah, it's been the long time start there, isn't it? But Shaquem Griffin, if anyone can do it, he seems to have the wherewithal to do it, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Huge shoes, just like myself trying to replace Adam this week. it's almost impossible, but I just on Shaquem Griffin, you know, I can't wait for that lad. The eyes of the world are going to be on him. I know he's looked so good in preseason, just everywhere. If he wasn't making the tackle, he was right there to be the next man making it.
Yeah.
He's so fast. I thought I was being really positive about him throughout the process of saying he's going to, you know, at the very least, he's going to be an amazing special teams player. And he's just gone so much further than, you know, I thought I'd been positive, and he's gone even further than that. He's started, and I can't wait to see him. I really can't.
Yeah, Pete Carroll said after week two against the Chargers in preseason, they did have to slow it down for him a little bit and alter the playbook somewhat to aid his development. But yeah, it's so cool to see how as you say, how quickly everything seems to be picked up by him. But if you, I guess, suppose you've followed him longer than most Seahawks fans have, it probably isn't that and surprising. Yeah, a lot of focus will be on him on Sunday. Also on the linebacker spot, Kalitro, I mean, I can't think of where the linebackers, obviously Malcolm Smith is probably the other one. Is Kalitro looks like the best backup middle linebacker we've had since Bobby Wagner's been here.
He's come from nowhere for me, but he looks so good. That last preseason game especially, it was him and Griffin for, what, the first half?
Yeah.
And they were just all over the place. Yeah. Really impressed. Brock Coyle, he looks quite, you know, decent. So, there are other players who have made to look good, so let's hope it's just not a system thing. But, I've got high hopes for him.
Yeah, moving back up front now to the defensive line, Dave Bailey asks where the sacks are going to come from. He says Frank Clark can't do it alone, but is Green the answer? Jordan or maybe Puna Ford surprises. Puna Ford, I think, is going to be more of a run defender, Jaron Reed backup type, isn't he?
Yes, I think so. He's. I'm really excited about the defensive tackle group. There's some young players in here. Jones, obviously Puna Ford. Yeah. John Reed, Quentin Jefferson, looks like he's going to be taking on more than Jacksonville fans this season. I'm really excited about that group. But yeah, the pass rush is Frank Clark and Frank Clark and... Yeah.
Wait and see.
Yeah, and whoever makes it out of the treatment room fast enough, I think.
Yeah, but after the draft, John Snyder and Pete Carroll did say that the one they were surprised they were able to get in the draft was Rasheem Green, and he seems to have... The bend, he seems to already know where to put and how to use his hand work is amazing. Sometimes it's like Cliff Averill in some of the early snaps, especially in the first couple of weeks of preseason. So there's only positives, and there's only overachieving, I think. Is that maybe the right word for the defensive line to bring?
I think the school of thought on Green during the draft was that he's raw and he's going to need a year to learn. But he's really so impressive in games. So why not? Yeah, get him out there. See what he can do. What harm can it do for a little while?
Yeah, and obviously there is obviously a massive thing on missing Cliff Averill, who's retired and now on Seattle Radio, and Michael Bennett, who's now in Philadelphia blasting out music from the middle of the locker room. That is, no matter what happens with Green, that is still a big, tall task to replace, and yet again we go back to replacing the possibly irreplaceable Duncan.
Absolutely, yeah, it's
quite annoying. It's still very weird watching Sherman in Niners white and red, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's sad more than anything. I don't know the story behind it. I don't, you know, what the truth was behind anything. perhaps he was, you know, became too much for them. But I sort of feel like it's not his fault he left. He was released. He was injured. He's back now, you know, miraculously. So could we have kept him on?
Yeah.
Probably. You know, it's sad to see him there. I don't wish him any ill at all. You know, no, good luck. Even if it is the 49ers, you know, it's, you know, good luck. Good luck to him and good luck to them, honestly.
Yeah. I agree with all that. Obviously, in Sherman's place, Shaquille Griffin has moved over to Sherman's side of the field. Opposite him, it appears that's going to be Donte Johnson. And inside at nickel is Justin Coleman. As you said earlier about the Broncos wide receivers, they have quite a tough challenge for week one, don't they?
They do. Shaquille Griffin was so good in his first year, and you know, this is really is his crucial year now. Can he keep it going? And I think he will. I think, you know, it's probably some family determination in there that you can see in both of them. I don't think he's going to take a step back. And Justin Coleman is just so impressive.
Yeah.
I don't know how we managed to get him. Such a good player.
For Cassius Marsh.
Yeah, crazy. really, really impressive cornerback. As for the rest of them, you know, Brad McDougald's going to be himself. He's a good player. Be interesting to see what else happens at corner there. I think it's Nico Thorpe to start, is it not?
Yeah, well, he's missed all of training camp, isn't he? So he might be a bit, he might be on a pitch count, as Pete Carroll says. So that could be one to watch. Also, you've got Trey Flowers as well, who seems to be Pete Carroll's pet project for this off-season, converting from a safety to a cornerback. And the early signs are positive and encouraging that they retrieve Flowers. He seems to not let anything go over the top of him, but it's just that bit in between 10 to 20 yards, isn't it? That's got to be.
He has a lot of potential. Probably to throw him in there week one, you know, at the starting corner is a step too far, and he's going to need a little more time. You know, he's changing position. He's young. He's trying to learn in the league in one of the toughest positions, like you say, against some of the toughest wide receivers. So, you know, probably give him a little time, but he could come good. Tedrick Thompson, though, is my big concern. I'm very glad to see Thomas back.
Yeah, I think that probably is my biggest. I think the secondary is easily my biggest concern on the defensive side of the ball. It's very thin, very quickly, very young. Yeah. And before I turn on Thomas, turn very inexperienced as well. But yeah, it's a pretty tough challenge all round in Denver. Are you confident of a week one win, Duncan?
I think you can guess by now. No, I'm not. I have hope. I think we'll be competitive. I think when it comes down to it, we're just going to have to sort that a little bit too much to make up in the fourth quarter, probably. I'm just looking for positives. You know, could play for an offensive line. You know, like you said, secondary, if they look decent to good, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I have virtually no confidence in this year. This week, it's, as I say, it's a tough place to go. The defense is going to be hard to stop them getting to our quarterback, and they might be a bit of a fearsome front to run on as well. Obviously, all the question marks are secondary with Emmanuel Sanders, Cortland Sutton, and Demaryius Thomas is not going to be a pretty viewing. I don't think it's going to be a blowout or anything embarrassing like that. I just think we're not going to know much more than we do now. We're not going to know much more in 5 or 6 days, I don't think, about this team. It's all on to the Bears thing. It's just everything mixed together just not bode well for a Seahawks win. Prediction for this Sunday? Score prediction?
Score wise?
Yeah.
Oh, let's go 24-17. A late touchdown to give us hope. Time to just expire on us.
I think I'm gonna go 20-10 to the Broncos. I think it's gonna be quite tough. I think the offense is gonna have its usual Pete Carroll slow start, and it's not gonna be doable to get back. As you say, I think it'll be a 10-point game for the entire fourth quarter kind of thing. Again, we just kind of threaten and do what the Huskies did on Saturday and have some feelings at inopportune times. League wide, a few of the headlines. Obviously, Aaron Donald decided, unfortunately, to report to Rams camp and became the highest paid defensive player in NFL history. it's annoying that he didn't wait 5 weeks, isn't it?
Isn't it just I mean, when you look at the pass rushes we have to face in the first 5 weeks, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
But Aaron Donald, I wasn't surprised. There's no bad blood between him and the team at all.
No.
The only thing I am, does fascinate me is, do they have much more cap than everyone else? It's, they're throwing money to everyone.
Yeah.
And what, it must be a year, 2 years before the Jared Goff contract. So
the
window's open for the Rams, and it may well be short.
Yeah, that's fascinating what they're going to do with Jared Goff, because I still don't believe he's very good. And obviously Aaron Donald was made the highest paid player in defensive play in NFL history, and it lasted all of 20 hours. The Oakland Raiders, for some reason, in April, March, February, whatever it was, decided to give ESPN commentator and former Raider and Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach John Gruden a 10-year contract worth $100 million, and then 6 months later, they don't have cash flow to pay their best defensive player and probably 1A to Donald's 1 in disruptive presences for NFL defense. Khalil Mack held out all training camp like Aaron Donald, Le'Veon Bell, and Earl Thomas did, but he got his money and he got his trade.
Man, 10-year contract.
Yep.
The only other I've heard of was Alan Pardew, and for American listeners, that's a football coach who was average at best for some middling teams, and I think he lasted 2 years, and they had to pay him a lot of money, which I think possibly still paying.
I think they are.
Yeah, just to get rid of him, so I don't understand. I really don't. It's baffling, but what a crazy move overall, Khalil Mack.
Yeah, Khalil Mack gone to the Bears. The Bears have absolutely looked out here. What do you make of the price they paid?
Well, I've seen a lot of tweets saying, would you give up your team's last two first round picks for Khalil Mack, and I'd bite their hands off. It's a lottery. The draft's a lottery. As much as you can plan it and mock it and draft the players that you like, they could be Jamarcus Russell or they could be Aaron Donald. It's if you give up two first round picks for a Khalil Mack, it's probably going to be worth it overall. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, John Gruden, probably the smartest thing he said for quite a while. He said they're going to be second guessed on it for until the cows come home. They are going to be, but they have made a bit of a boo boo. What that team is undergoing, undergoing change when they didn't really need it, did they? They seem pretty primed for at least a.
Yeah, they were one of the inverted commas good teams, weren't they? It's just all vanished from underneath them. There's some crazy moves and giving up draft picks here, there, and everywhere for people like Bryant, and I think they're losing control a little.
Yeah, I do. They would be a fascinating Hard Knocks team to watch this year. Obviously, you're the contract. Snafu holdout that dominated the NFL training camp preseason was Le'Veon Bell. As we speak, he's still hasn't shown up for work for the Steelers, and possibly in a way that has rarely been seen. His Steeler teammates, in particular, the guys who blocked for him to get for him to think he deserves some money he hasn't yet received from the Steelers, have thrown him under the proverbial bus. Ronald Foster, right guard I think he is for the Steelers, said, "What do you do? Here's a guy who doesn't give a damn, I guess, so we'll treat it as such. I just hate it's come to this. He's making 7 times what I make, twice as much as what Al Villa Nueva is making, and we're the guys who do it for him." Marquise Pouncey, the centre for the Steelers, said, "We just finally accept things at some point, and you're like, alright, if you don't want to be here, it is what it is, hold out for 10 weeks And other guy, David DeCastro from Stanford, said, "I think we're all disappointed. What's the expression? We're stuck with our foot in our mouth. We'd all thought he'd be here by now." That is some... It's not often you see that from teammates, is it? Pete Carroll says about protect the team. That's the opposite of that, isn't it?
Quite, yeah. I mean, we're talking about Doug Baldwin sporting Earl Thomas. And I speculated that they're all talking to each other, because they're all friends. And you see this today and... You wonder, is he are they friends? Do they speak? You know, it seems crazy. It's kind of out of the blue. I thought he'd be back in a similar way that Thomas is, because it's the first week of the season and he wants his money.
Yeah.
But he could be off sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I do think he will be. Moving on, though, we'll bring it back in 2018, NFL season's back. So we're going to bring back Lock, Awe and Shock. Duncan, your Lock of the Week for Week 1 in the NFL season.
Well, I've given this a lot of thought. It's got to be the Saints over the Bucks. Saints are at home, they're looking incredible. I've got them down as division winners and you know, in line for a Super Bowl spot, perhaps, amongst a few other teams, and the Bucks are just going the other way. Yeah. There's a lot of change there. A lot of it not for the better. They got some good players, especially on defence, don't get me wrong, but the Saints are just going to be too strong for them.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. My Lock of the Week is the last game of the week. Kicks off 3 a.m. in the morning, Tuesday morning in England, Monday night, Tuesday morning. I think the Rams are going to shellack the Raiders. I think too much has gone on. The reaction to the Khalil Mack trade from Bruce Irvin, which is always just the best thing about any Raiders move they make. Derek Carr, obviously, and yeah, I see them being a bit of a rudderless ship somewhat. I think they've made a horrendous misjudgment, giving all that money and all that time and all that power to John Gruden. So yeah, the Rams to beat the Raiders is my Lock of the Week. So you're welcome, Raiders. Shock of the Week. It's obviously tough to say in week one, but Shock of the Week for you?
My Shock of the Week, let's hope it qualifies as a shock. I think it does, because it's going to be a loss for the reigning Super Bowl champions at home to the Falcons.
Yep.
And I do this because despite how strong the Eagles really are, and they're very, very good, their lines especially, they were... You know, they've been known as the underdogs throughout postseason, and I see no great moves and shakes around in off season to make them take the next step. Although, you know, you'd argue that there is no next step from the Super Bowl win, but they, you know, they're playing Nick Foles still. I don't think they're going to be as tremendous as they were at the end of last season. I think the Falcons are. They're a great team. That, you know, their new offense has had a year to get settled, and I think they're a due run.
Yeah, I think it, because the Super Bowl champs, it definitely counts as a shock. Obviously, Nick Foles is playing, Carson Wentz is being brought along slowly, which is obviously definitely the right decision to do your franchise quarterback. But also, Alshon Jeffrey is out, so it's all on Nelson Aguilar and the tight ends. Obviously, the bevy running backs as well. My Shock of the Week. I think, as I said, I think you probably took the likeliest shock, if that makes sense. I think I'm going to go for the Texans to win in Foxborough against the Patriots. I think that offense with Deshaun Watson back under center, Nuk Hopkins, obviously the running game can get going. That defense has got J.J. Watt back, and that is going to make a big old pile of difference for not only the Texans defense for the season, but against the Patriots O-line, which has... lost someone on that line. I can't remember who they lost, but yeah, there's still question marks about that team, about the Patriots, even with Tom Brady. But as always, they'll probably go and win by 40 now. So that, yeah, I think the Texans could quite easily go into Foxborough and beat the Patriots. One quick question, just moving quickly back onto the Seahawks. I forgot to cover. Who do you think your Seahawk breakout player of the year is? A player to watch for a breakout in 2018.
A breakout in 2018.
I mean, it's probably one of the rookies, isn't it? Or
it has to be. I don't think it's Dixon anymore. I think he's got enough coverage not to surprise anyone.
Yeah.
I am going to go with Nazir Jones. I think Seahawks fans saw something in him last year. Yeah. I don't think, if you ask most other fans, they'd have heard of him. I think he's going to be fantastic on that line. I think he's going to be started before too long next to Reed, and he's really going to come on leaps and bounds.
Yeah, I like that pick. Well, it's weird he was playing with like the third string last week against the Raiders. That was a bit strange.
I think he's better than that.
Yeah, unless he was just trying to get, unless he's missed practice time and stuff, just trying to get his legs under. It was a bit weird. For me, it's probably going to be I kind of like how he looks. I think Trey Flowers could be the guy. I think he could have not to the level of Shaquille Griffin last year, but I think he could be like that kind of emergence on the opposite side of the field to Shaquille Griffin this year. But I think Trey Flowers could be the name and the player to watch for the Seahawks as the season rolls along. I think that's everything NFL wide. Obviously, college season kicked off properly last week, and the Huskies lost a low scoring tight one to the Auburn Tigers. LSU absolutely dominated Miami, and Florida State's offense possibly could be the worst in all of college football. Anything catch your attention last week, Duncan, or any players you'll be watching ahead of next year's draft, or however ridiculous that sounds, in week one?
Yes, well, not so much players, but a position group. I was really pleased to see Wisconsin on television over here. Their offensive line is incredible, and they're all going to be stars. It's an interesting position group with a few of them playing not in their favoured roles, but as a group, they're just playing so well, and their running back is just really using that to his advantage. Apparently, one of the favourites for the Heisman, and perhaps that should be given to his line for their play and creating holes for him. But I was really pleased to see them.
It's like a factory, isn't it? Obviously, they had all the stuff with DeCastro and DeCastro. Who else did they have?
Ramchuk. Ramchuk was
it. They always seem to churn out at least one. Kind of like the Huskies out there with the DBs. The one player, always have to pick a player. Noah Fant is the one to keep around, Nebraska tight end. He's probably going to go, possibly could go first round next year. He looked really good last year for the Cornhuskers, and obviously last week their game was postponed because of a lightning storm. But yeah, he's someone I'll be watching. Outside of that, as I said, that Florida State offense looks completely confused and disheveled with Willie Taggart there going from Oregon back over to Florida. It just didn't look like it knew what it was doing, and the Virginia Tech secondary again looks strong, deep and long as well, which is always something to watch out for as a Seahawks fan. Quickly, let's quickly go around, as it's the start of the NFL season, we're quickly going around some predictions. Just going to shout out divisions and other things, who you think is going to win what division and all other stuff. NFC West champ will be Duncan.
Rams.
Yeah, same. NFC South champ will be
Saints.
I think the Falcons. NFC East champ
Is the New York Giants. I think their offense is going to be far too strong.
Even with Eli,
he's got a stronger offensive line. He's got a new left tackle. He's got a fantastic rookie guard. He's got Engram. He's got Beckham. He's got Shepherd. He's got Barkley. There's so many weapons. It's going to be a different team there. And they're decent offense. Sorry, on defense, they've got some good players. Jenkins and just signed Ogletree. I think they drew a run.
Yeah, I've got the Eagles just because I think the Cowboys are a bit of a mess. The Redskins are going to be terrible. NFC North, I've gone for the Packers.
Oh, Vikings for me. I know they've got a new quarterback, but he's a similar sort of gunslinger to Keenum, only a little bit higher quality, so why not them again?
AFC West, I've gone Chargers.
Chargers all day.
I think people are sleeping on them a little bit. I think that if everyone stays healthy, that is possibly the most talented team in the NFL. I mean, that wide receiver corps, you've got the running back, you've got the defense with Derwin James back there now. It's pretty impressive. AFC East, it's the Patriots, isn't it, all day long?
Yeah, I can't see anyone else challenging them. They take a step back. What else is there?
AFC South.
The AFC South is the Jags, but don't sleep on the Titans. I think everyone's forgetting them, but they've only improved this offseason.
Yeah, and they've also got a much better coach in Mike Vrabel as well, who's come from the Belichick tree. That's who I've gone for, the Titans. AFC North, I've gone Steelers.
Yeah, despite all their troubles, it's got to be the Steelers because I don't see a challenge. Possibly the Ravens, but they're going to be a few weeks worth of quarterback battle, aren't they, with the fans cheering one way or the other, and see it being a little bit chaotic for the Ravens. So, yeah, no real challenges to the Steelers.
Super Bowl will be between...
Oh, now you're putting me on the spot.
I've got the Patriots and Packers.
I am going to go for, off the top of my head, Saints Patriots.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun. That would be fun. That'd be more fun than mine, to be fair.
It'd be more fun if it wasn't the Patriots. But
massive thanks, Duncan, for jumping on. Obviously, Adam, I think he's back next week. I'll have to find that out. Where can people get in touch, see all your opinions and articles and interviews with other NFL Hall of Famers?
Well, Hall of Famers, we'll see about that. I'm on Twitter at Duncan J. Terry. I write on at 99 Yards. That's spelled out in words. And give us a shout and tell me I've been far too negative.
I'm sure you will get that. Me and Adam get that quite a lot, but it's not being negative, as you say, it's being a realist, isn't it?
I hope so. Yeah. I try and be as real as possible.
Yeah, and obviously you are going to be down there in London in, 5 weeks' time now, which is wild to think it's so close, and tickets are pay to be going on sale, but you'll be there all the weekend, won't you?
Yep, tickets secured now, so I'll be there. I'll be there for the weekend. I'll be at the NFL Goo UK party on Saturday night, which I don't know if it's host to the Seahawks party. Let's hope I can pop in both.
Ours is the London Bridge, I think.
I will have to find out where the other one is.
Yeah, so
last minute,
how can people get tickets? Obviously, because the Seahawks one is sold out and there's a wait list, which may not be open. It's a TBD on that. But where can people get tickets for that?
There are tickets. If you go onto Twitter and find at NFL Girl UK, there's a party on the Saturday night before each of the Wembley games. There's also a Christmas function, which there is a special guest at. So check that out.
Cool. Yeah, and obviously, if on 99 Yards, you can go and read Duncan's really cool interview with former Seahawk and Seahawk Ring of Honor member, retired Hall of Famer from 4 or 5 years ago, Walter Jones, who I think you told you, Duncan, he's making a trip over himself.
Yes, he was such a nice guy to talk to, and we're having such fun, and he was telling me how this is his first real long international flight and how he's worried about being a big man on a plane. I'm only 6 foot, but I feel
he's a large human being. Obviously, I was lucky enough to meet him a few years ago when he walked into the place I was in and plumped himself down on the breakfast pie. Like, oh, that's actually Walter Jones, and yes, he is very large. So yeah,
massive
thanks, Duncan, for jumping on. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll have to get you back on when Adam's not
traveling
the world like Michael Palin. Enjoy the game from wherever you watch it. Also, one quick thing before we go. This weekend, the Washington State Cougars have their home opener for 2018 season. And as everyone knows, if you've been on Twitter or Facebook or listen to this podcast, we will be supporting the Hlinski's Hope in London with some fundraising. Hlinski's Hope was set up in memory of Tyler Hlinski, the former Washington State Cougar quarterback who shot himself in earlier this year. This weekend's game for the Cougs in Pullman sees the Hlinski family and everyone close to Tyler there as they do ceremonies honoring him and tribute him, and his number and the Hlinski Hope flag will be flying above the stadium in Pullman. So for all the Hlinski family and all Washington State Cougar fans listening, I hope it all goes off well, and it's a fitting tribute for what is quite a tragic story, isn't it, Duncan?
Yes, absolutely. That's a really good thing to do.
So yeah, until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Doug, what was your reaction when Earl showed up today?
Oh man, ecstatic. When I saw him sitting down in the meeting room, I couldn't help but just go give him a big hug. You know, it's my boy. Love him to death. You know, you grow with somebody, you see somebody work for so long, just how they operate, the type of person they are. You know, and it's really hard to come by guys who, you know, who think out of this stratosphere, as Bobby would like to call it. So it was really exciting to have him back. Extremely excited to have him back. Can't wait to spend more time with him.